Hi, and welcome to Entrepreneur Stories Season 2, Episode 2. And today, I'm in the company of Joachim Bars. Now, Joachim is today the CEO of Liante, but he was also the CEO of Tello. Tello, an app that many of you know, or at least I know, that actually helps freelancers control and be in totally on top of their books and their book of business. But I'm not the one here to talk about it. I'd actually want Joachim to let us know a little bit more about it, but we really want to get into the nitty gritty of what's it like to be an entrepreneur? What's it like to see corporate synergies? And what are the struggles and disadvantages or even great obstacles that one goes through? So welcome, Joachim.
Thank you.
Thank you for making time. I know you have a very busy day every day, including Friday afternoon. So appreciate it. So can you tell us a little bit about Tello? How was it born? What was the need in the market at the time?
Well, it actually came about after what we call a moonshot campaign within the Rabobank, where we were allowed to enter our own ideas on what we thought was best for the company, or alternative ideas to what the bank was already developing. And we kind of came to the conclusion that banking as such was too minimal, and we came up with the idea to add more services to for our business customers. So at first we started with an idea that was focused on the top SME client segment. And we thought it would be wise to give them all sorts of information and give them a portal where they could see information about HR and their figures on how they were performing. So that was our basic first idea. But after interviewing about 35 SME clients, we came to the conclusion that the thing that we came up with already existed, and it was called Excel. A really nifty solution, and pretty much all the entrepreneurs are using Excel as a basic way to keep track of their performance. And that gave us kind of the idea that if there's a free solution in the market that everyone's using, there's no real market for our solution. But we came to the conclusion that each and every entrepreneur goes through the same struggle when they start their business. And that is the impact the Belastingdienst, as we call them in the Netherlands, so the tax authorities in a country, they kind of stumble into them and get fined because they don't provide the right tax applications. And we saw that struggle with every entrepreneur. And then we went into the numbers and saw that in the Netherlands, at least, each year 100,000 freelancers are starting as an entrepreneur. So we thought, well, that's the biggest market we could focus on. And we found that they all had a universal kind of pain. And that pain was, what everyone's calling the shoebox problem. And we thought if we could combine banking and the shoebox, we might have a solution. So that's where we started.
That's very cool. So you identified this problem. So I'm imagining in terms of milestones, you had a lot of validation to go through and perfect the problem need solution. Am I correct to infer that?
Yeah. We actually went through the classic problem solution fit, product market fit for every step. And I think the first step took us about 3 to 4 months. So the problem solution fit, and we interviewed over 200 entrepreneurs during that period. And without even building one single thing. So it took us from May till end of August to kind of come to the conclusion of the first MVP we wanted to build.
And throughout this process, did you also, because you are a corporate startup, right? You did have corporate backing from Rabobank.
Yep.
And did you have check-in milestones set out with the bank, or were you just able to fly until MVP and then report back?
Well, it was because it was a part of the corporate startup, the moonshot campaign within the Rabobank, that there was some flexibility because it was the first moonshot campaign that we started as Rabobank. So they saw as they went on as well. So it was their MVP. So it was a Rabobank MVP on how to start with innovation within the company. So that gave us some flexibility, but we built the milestones ourselves. Because we thought if we create the right milestones, we can get the right amount of money we need for each and every step. And the normal corporate way of starting a project is to build a business plan, ask for, say, 3 to 5 million, and then start working on it. So we took it the other way around, and we started with, I think, 20,000 euros for the first step. I think we only used about half of that during the first phase, and then we asked for the next stage, and that wasn't the highest amount as well. And it took us another 10 months with that part of the budget to actually prove our first thoughts in the MVP phase. Yeah, so we kind of created the milestones ourselves, creating milestones that were big enough to validate any assumptions that we had, but small enough for the company to say, well, for that amount, yeah, you can go ahead. So in order for us to keep proceeding on a project that we thought the bank wasn't really keen on moving forward.
That's really interesting. And it brings me to questions I want to know from you about entrepreneurship and how you view it. But just to kind of wrap up, Tello, how long did it take you to, or how long was your tenure in the project? And to you, let's start with that question, and then I'll ask you the second one.
So how long it actually took us? So yeah. I think the first phase, so the interview phase, took us about 4 months. Then we started building on a first MVP, starting with a concierge model where we supported, I think, five freelancers in their daily administration tasks. Then we built our first application, and that was in January of 2016. We tested that, validated that, and based on our first kind of technical MVP, we started building in September of 2016 and introduced the product. The first introduction was to our then current audience, which were 50 users, was in February of 2017. And then we did a full market launch in July of 2017. So it actually, all in all, took us we kind of built two solutions. The second full bookkeeping system took us about 6 months to build, and it was a full-on bookkeeping solution.
That's pretty incredible. That's a lot of building. I know from experience that takes a lot of work to match those timings. I know Tello, and I've read a lot about it. What was the coolest feature in your own opinion?
I think the coolest feature is that nobody really recognized the complexity that's behind the app. So it's not really one feature, but it's the total UX and UI. A lot of my colleagues within the bank said, "Well, it's just a scan app, right?" And we said, "No, it's a full bookkeeping app." And they said, "Yeah. So you can scan a document." And we said, "No. You can actually file your tax with the application. It does the full income statement or the full profit and loss and the full balance sheet." And then they were just baffled by and said, "You were just building this workflow application, right?" And we said, "No, yeah, it for the end user, it's a workflow application to manage their books. So it is a full-on product with a very simple UI." And I think that was the coolest feature of what we did. The whole product was kind of grand. It had more features in it than most of the bookkeeping software that is out there in the market right now.
Shifting gears into entrepreneurship, and I really enjoy the things you've said, especially the part about unlocking capital. Would that be something you would advise entrepreneurs to do, which is ask for capital as you need it instead of planning all of it ahead? Is that something you think entrepreneurs should also consider?
I think that depends on the project that you're on and the support you have within the organization. So if you have a innovation or project that is being understood by the whole company, it's easier to get people on board and supporting the project. But if you're on a project that no one really understands, and for us, bookkeeping within the bank, banks don't understand bookkeeping. So, and they don't understand the complexity of the whole market. So that's always hard to get people along with the project that you're on. So then taking baby steps gets you further, I think. But if everyone agrees to the project, you might want to get the budget and just move as quickly as you can. But on the other hand, you could also say if you take a more bootstrap approach, don't give yourself too much money, you become more efficient as well. And it requires you to really think through what you're building and not move forward too fast by building things that are not really required by the end user. So yeah, having small budgets, it kind of makes you think better about what you're doing. So from a company perspective, I would suggest start with small budget, because whenever you start handing out cash, it's easier for people to jump the gun and start building things which they think are best, or try to move on as quickly as possible because of the idea that you might lose the project as well. That could be an incentive as well. I mean, not really validating the things that you're working on. So for a company, it's wise to give small budgets. And I think for your own learning experience as an entrepreneur, it's best not to have too much cash as well.
Very cool. And do you find entrepreneurship hard?
Well, that's a big question.
I mean, I know everyone says it's difficult. You might be going against the grain, but there is, a payoff at the end of all this. But did you find it difficult?
Well, in some ways, yes. In some ways, no. The standard thing people are always saying about how the organization is working against you, and how especially compliance, legal, and risk are the people who aren't going along with you, and IT guys, they have big schedules and they don't want to make time for you. I think that's a load of crap, because I think if you have a good idea and if you're enthusiastic about the idea, people are really willing to move along. The hardest part is, I think, higher management. And especially in big companies, because at one point, and I think this was a striking example, the head of IT, who also led the innovation agenda within Rabobank, he said, well, you need to be more bold. You don't need to comply to all the Rabobank requirements. And at a certain point, we needed some IT guys to do some work for us, but we got blocked. So I went up to him and I said, let's be bold. I just want to use a couple of your guys during the weekend to finish part of the project, and it won't set back any of the projects. The only thing I would like to ask you is to go to those guys, give them a bottle of wine, and shake their hands. And then he paused and he said, I can't. If I do that, I really get in trouble with some of my colleagues, because I really gave them a hard time a couple of weeks back. And if I cut through the red tape right now, I'll have big problems. So it was at that point that we still managed to do it, but we went through different ways. And it was just the fact that we knew pretty much everyone in the company that allowed us to work through the red tape that was in the organization. But it kind of showed that it's not the people who actually do the job, it's the people who manage those people who really want to have a say about everything. And their hands are always tied down by the procedures that are in the company. So that is those parts of the politics within the company, those are the hard parts. It's not the guys who are on regulation, it's not the guys who are working in IT. Those guys really want to join and help you along. And we got great support from a lot of people within Rabobank. I think the most pushback we got were from the people you at first sight wouldn't expect. It's the guys, especially the guys who are in innovation, in management, those guys who are saying, we need to innovate, we need to push forward the innovation agenda. And I think that's because we kind of debunked the myths around innovation and around getting developments along in the organization. And it kind of put the mirror into their faces. So that gave me the hardest time within the organization. The fact that I gave that mirror and kind of said, not in a direct way, but in an indirect way, we want to move this company along, but it's you guys who are actually putting up the red tape. The guys who are standing on the so-called barricades that we need to innovate, those are actually the people who are pushing against the innovation. Because when it actually happens, they become aware that what they are saying is actually counterproductive. It's not really helping the organization. So it's a strange contradiction.
No, but it makes sense. And I think with that question, I'd love to know from you, what kind of traits or advice would you give an entrepreneur to sharpen in terms of skills?
Well, I read this book How to Kill a Unicorn. That book gave an insight from a company perspective, a consultancy company that was a consultancy company in innovation. And they kind of tried to debunk the myth around innovation, the big myth that only 10% of innovations really succeed. And and they were trying ways to find out how you can make innovation more effective, especially within companies. And they were talking about the money and the magic side of any type of innovation that they were involved in. And they described the magic part as more kind of the consumer part. And there's a lot of focus on that part. Lean Startup really focuses on that, getting into contact with the customer, asking what the customer really wants. So developing a product that the market really wants is one part of the solution when you're part of corporate innovation. The other part is getting the company along with the idea. And that's where the money part comes in. And how they described it was, what are the assets within the company that you can use that can accelerate your innovation? So in order to find a solution or innovation that could help your company, spend 50% of your time talking to a customer and spend 50% of your time in the company itself and try to discover what unused assets there are in the company and start talking to people who could help you. And for us, in a way, that was connecting the back end of the banking system to our application. And we kind of started a search on the assets that were already in the company, and we found a couple of people who were at a service within the company that allowed us to peek into the accounts of pretty much all the Rabobank customers. And it was unused. It was just being used by Equens at that stage. And we kind of twitched it a bit. And the people we worked with, the Rabobank people, they were really enthusiastic because finally there was someone in the company who wanted to use their excellent service. And it was a breakthrough for us because it allowed us to gain access to an asset that would help us build our final solution for our end customer. So my biggest advice is, don't just go outside the company, also search within the company. Look for the assets that are around. Look for the maybe low-hanging fruit within your company.
Fantastic. And I have one last question for you. And I'd love to know, as a barometer, entrepreneurship and corporate companies, do you believe that corporate companies are in pole position with their entrepreneurs to create corporate ventures today and to infuse innovation and build startups?
Again, a big question. Yeah, big companies have big access to the end customer. So, yeah, I think big corporates are set up to build and create the best solutions for the end customer. However, and this drills back down to Kodak, I think, and unless there is a deep need to explore new ways of working and new solutions for the end customer, if that need is part of the corporate culture, yes, then you could succeed. But if you look at the Rabobank, for instance, because that's my best reference, my perspective is that the company makes so much money on their current business that they have a really hard time envisioning finding new business models and really making money on that. So in my opinion, most of the innovation that is part of most of the corporates, it's not really moving the needle. Because it's not really moving the needle from a financial perspective, it is more kind of a hobby than it is a solution. And maybe in a worse way, I try to explain it like it being a vacuum cleaner. You kind of want to use innovation as a vacuum cleaner to pull in innovation and entrepreneurship into your company. But if you put the hose on the wrong end of the vacuum cleaner, you're blowing out all the innovation and the entrepreneurs and the creativity that was in the company. You're blowing it out of your company. And I think that is the hardest part. And I think a lot of companies are doing it wrong, and they're doing innovation for the wrong reasons. I think it's a lot of companies are busy with innovation, and the main motivation is the fear of missing out. I mean, basically, if you're a big bank CEO and you are at a conference and somebody asks you, so what are you doing with blockchain? You should be saying, I'm doing a lot with blockchain. I have a blockchain team, because blockchain is one of the biggest innovations in the financial industry. I mean, you'd be a total loser if you would say, well, we're not actually investigating blockchain at this point. You would feel like an utter loser. So that's why you're doing something with blockchain, not to really find out anything about blockchain, because whenever you stumble onto something that could help you, it might blow up in your face, or the risks are too high, and it won't really move the needle. So the thing that you're doing is having people working on blockchain. So at each and every conference, you could say, yep, I have a blockchain team. And maybe I'm a bit cynical about that, but it kind of feels like that. I don't think that many of the companies are using innovation or are busy with innovation for the right reasons.
And I think that's a very important message. And, you know, you've shared so many insights. And I just want to thank you for your time, Joachim, and being on Entrepreneur Stories, because it is difficult and there are these challenges, and you see that innovation could do a lot, but it can also be ineffective or not part of a strategy. And I think you touched upon all that. You also touched upon on a great insight that I'd love people who listen to this to take away, which is, in entrepreneurship, don't just look outside, also look within. Thank you, Joachim, for being on Entrepreneur Stories. Thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
Really appreciate it. I'm just going to wrap up here and I'll come back to you in that 20 seconds. That was episode 2 of Entrepreneur Stories, season 2. Great insights. Joachim Bars, CEO of Liante. Lots to learn. So thank you for listening. If you're interested in learning more about Joachim and Tello, we also will have the What's in a Corporate Startup clip that you can just click on the link below. If you know of any corporate ventures out there or entrepreneurs that we should be talking to, please don't hesitate to email me. That was Bundle with Entrepreneur Stories.